RunDNA has an extensive range of running and walking footwear. They're trusted by podiatrists and physiotherapists. The RunDNA fitter's advice is second to none. Pop into RunDNA, 20 Manton Street, Hindmarsh, or 391 Fullerton Road, Fullerton. They're open 7 days, plenty of off-street parking. If you walk or run, you need to RunDNA.
Fair or fast, Sophie and Ben challenge each other with their sporting conundrums. Sophie won the bat flip and is bowling first.
I'm actually feeling a bit nervous about this fair or fast because I learnt some things last week that it actually doesn't matter what question I ask Hooky. If he has a dying desire to get an opinion out there, he'll just twist my question and go on a very interesting and learned rant, which I will admit I deeply enjoyed, but at the end, just not answer my question at all, but get something off his chest. So I'm a bit nervous what's about to come out right now because I can prepare for my own questions, but I cannot prepare for Hooky's answers. Hooky, you got anything for me?
Expect more of the same is all I can say, so here it comes.
All right, well, with that being said, Hooky, my first question for you: to be back with a second minor premiership in just 8 years, Adelaide has completed the perfect rebuild. Fair or farce?
Perfect rebuild? Well, perfect is a difficult word to say fair to, but it's really difficult to argue with anything other than this has been an incredibly successful rebuild. So grand final 2017 failed on that day. We all know about the Gold Coast camp and the fallout from that. But there's been a lot of criticism around the way the Crows handled everything after that. They cut very hard at the end of 2019. They offloaded Eddie Betts, for goodness sake. Josh Jenkins, Hugh Greenwood, Sam Jacobs, Alex Keith, all stars of the football club. Brad Crouch was moved on next year. And it was an absolute purge. And they didn't get a whole lot for them in return. So it was clearly scheduled as a slow fix. It did consign them to last in 2020. They picked up Riley Filthorpe, a pick who was never going to make them better in the short term either. He was always going to spend a bit of time developing his game in the SANFL. They've subsequently picked up Josh Rochelli, Dan Curtin, Sid Draper, and all of those guys look elite. They've done really well in their trading, picking up Dawson and Rankin, who we've talked about. The preseason supplemental period, they've picked up Keane and Mitch Hinge, who are just incredible lads to be dominating in the defence for guys who are unwanted by their previous club, which is pretty incredible as well. So, this has been an incredibly successful turnaround on the basis of that very, very hard cull and that rebuild. Mark Ricciuto copped all sorts of criticism. Justin Reid copped all sorts of criticism. Stephen Rowe had their heads on a pike this time last year. They deserve some high praise, those guys. So fair, Soph. I think this has been perfect. A very, very, very successful rebuild to be back in this position 8 years later.
I like it, Ben. Thank you for answering my question. That's a good start. And I'm of the exact same opinion here. I reckon they've found a perfect blend of the up-and-coming youngsters and experience on that field. You've touched on it little bit about some of the culture issues that they were having back in 2018. So it's not just what they've put back on the field, but they've clearly done a lot of work in that locker room as well. And I reckon they've got a culture that could be a potential premiership contending team.
Well, we're going to find out in 5 weeks, aren't we? So, right, my turn to send one back at you. Port Adelaide will miss Ken Hinckley now he's gone.
Look, Hinckley has had custodianship of Port Adelaide club for 13 years, I want to say. Yeah. So, it's hard to say he wouldn't be missed. The departure is definitely going to continue to cause a bit of a divide between the AFL fans. He's seen the club through absolute peaks and troughs and what is it, 4 preliminary finals that he's seen the club through?
And definitely 3, Soph. Is it 4?
I think it might be 4. I could be wrong.
You would have done the maths. I'm not going to argue with you because you're the one who researches and I just take it off the top of my head.
I think it's 4. And look, obviously he's never got them over the line, but if anything we can say, it's hard to get those trophies. It's hard to get those wins. And I think Hinckley really has created a great team, a great club, and I think he will be missed, albeit probably in the short term. I don't think a coach ever goes to be missed for an extremely long amount of times, but I think he will be missed in the short term.
Well done, Soph. Disagree. I think it's fast. Footy clubs do move on. I reckon the only time that a football club has missed their coach was when the Crows lost Malcolm Blight. But I can't really recall any other coach who was missed the following year. Wallace, you barracked for Sydney. Paul Ruse was there, did an amazing job. And then John Longmire came in, and the footy club moved on pretty quickly, didn't it? So, yeah, I don't know if we're going to miss Ken Hinckley. I think we should be thankful for his contribution to the footy club. The way he revitalised that club from the bones of its backside, as you said, mm-hmm. so 13 years ago. But will they miss him? No, I don't think they will. I think everyone will move on pretty quickly.
Fair enough, Hookie, but I definitely do agree that he should be proud of what he's achieved at the club. He might have not walked away with silverware, but he's still walked away with a lot of achievements in that club. Now, we were on similar-ish warpaths here, Hookie. My question to you is, Chad Corns, Travis Boak, and Ken Hinckley are gone, but Warren Treadray is still there. Port Adelaide is dumping its heroes but keeping its problems. Fair or farce?
Keeping its problems. Look, I think this is fair. I'm stunned with the way Port Adelaide's handled this. I mean, I think by and large, the Port Adelaide board has been exceptional for the last 13 years post the Brett Duncanson era. I mean, we remember, and I love Brett Duncanson, but I can recall when he was bursting into tears and resigning from the role when they moved on Matthew Primus. But they've made some mistakes recently, haven't they? The Ken Hinckley long goodbye has been largely a disaster. Mm. And I'm stunned by the Treadray indecision. That's just been racked by a curious lack of decisiveness. I mean, if Ken wasn't your guy, as they decided in February, then I don't think he can be your guy in March. But they decided to go with this long goodbye, and it's been terrible. The same with Warren Treadray. I mean, if Treadray's a problem and they conceded he was, then rip the Band-Aid off. But it's 7 weeks since they announced a review into his position on the board. The season is over and he's still there. I mean, Treadray's platform was to sack Ken Hinckley. Everyone knows that. We all remember back to the untenable comment of, what was that, a year and a half ago now. That's happened. Ken's moved on. And look, Treaders might have other aspirations at the club, but this has to be a club-first decision now. If the club is serious about giving Josh Carr a fresh start, then a board so not obviously fractured should be the first order of business. Now, Treadray's member elected, but I can't imagine an outcry if he was removed and the members were given a fresh set of options this time around, particularly if a different past hero puts his or her hand up. Erin Phillips, I'm looking in your direction here. Wouldn't she be a great inclusion to the Port board? So, yeah, I think this has to happen. I think Port Adelaide needs to be decisive. They need to be fresh. They need to be united. And I reckon that doesn't include Warren Treadray, and they've got plenty of other great options.
I actually have nothing to add. I quite like ending that question on the little shout out to Erin Phillips there.
Righto, Soph. Well, that's good. I'm going to go straight back in with one for you. For South Australian footy, the Crows winning the AFL flag is a best case scenario. But the Crows winning the SANFL flag is a worst-case scenario. Fair or farce?
All right. Well, clearly Crows winning the AFL grand final is the best-case scenario. So we can just wipe that section of that question completely off. That's tick off, start to that question.
Fans have all tuned out straight away now that you've said that.
Look, I see where you're going here, Hookie, with this question, and I'm predicting we're probably going to be at odds. I do not think that winning the SANFL is the worst-case scenario. Crows and SANFL obviously act like a reserve team. It's used for the up-and-comers, people coming back from injury. And the strength of the current Crows SANFL team is clearly an indicator of the Crows AFL team. But this is not the case every single year. They also finish third. It's not like they're demolishing their opponents right now. Port AFL struggled. Port SANFL struggled. So I don't think it's a bad thing, and I don't think it's a bad thing if they win at the end of the day.
So if I'm a Crows fan, and I'm not seriously offended by them being in the SANFL, and I can understand the pressure points around the, you know, the global, the holistic picture of Australian rules football and how the SANFL has to accommodate the Crows at the moment and Port Adelaide as well. So I can deal with all of that. But, gee, I hope they don't win. The SANFL is a league I love. I grew up with it. I cannot think of anything that will alienate the traditional fan more than a Crows SANFL premiership, and I fear what comes after that for the traditional clubs. So for me, it's fair. That would be the worst case scenario for me.
All right, fair enough, Hookie. Well, I'm coming straight back at you. The AFL couldn't have picked a worse date to start the AFLW than AFL Round 23. Fair or farce?
It started last week. Mm-hmm. Could they have picked a worse date? What's farce? Because they could have. They could have started it on Christmas Day, on Mother's Day, Boxing Day during the Boxing Day test, or Australia Day and, you know, refuse to do an Indigenous celebration or something like that. So, yes, they could have picked a worse day, but AFL Round 23 is the next worst. I reckon this has been an unmitigated disaster. I was actually one who said that going to start the season in the bye of the pre-finals bye for the men's competition mm-hmm. made sense, but I don't think it's worked at all. Going 2 weeks earlier, I think, has exacerbated the problem. And I really think the AFLW belongs starting back in February before the men and give itself some clear space and its own momentum. And it's really lost that at the moment. And starting on round 23, as you said, Soph, bad decision. Farce, but I understand exactly what you're saying. And you're dead right. If that's what you are saying, then you are 100% correct.
Thank you, Hookie. I did think you were about to skirt around my question there, so I'm glad you actually realised what the actual question was. So thank you.
One to come, and you can have your own say on this, but Hockey South Australia has a new structure to its finals competition. We've touched on it before. It's an 8-week final series where all 8 teams are involved, and a team finishing outside the top 4 can actually eliminate one of the top 4 teams. This is unfair and doesn't reward consistency throughout the season. Fair or farce?
Look, like our listeners know, I've actually gone out and watched my brother in the Metro 1 final. I've finally brought myself to look up the website on Hockey SA, and there is a really good diagram which explains exactly how the final systems work and this play-in. But look, reviewing it and looking at it, and I was doing the maths today, Hookie, and I'm a lawyer, so maths isn't my strong suit. So trying to work out who the hell was actually in the finals, I can't remember what exactly they call these finals now, was difficult. But it did look like the two bottom teams have been knocked out for Premier League women and men, so it hasn't happened, but there may be a day that it will happen that a bottom team could knock out one of the top teams. And I think it's completely unfair. We're talking about our top divisions here. It's a bit like a participation grade, letting our bottom teams jump into the finals, if you want my honest opinion. I mean, yeah, maybe for juniors when we're trying to grow the game, give them experience, give them development. But for our top teams, we need to be awarding the teams finishing at the top of the ladder, not just hand out finals and make everyone a finalist. I think it's a bit ridiculous, personally.
Well, I just want to pick up something you said earlier on. You're a lawyer. If I'd have known that, I wouldn't have bothered arguing with you so often. No wonder I lose every time. My goodness, just you argue for a living. You're paid a poultice to argue with other people. No wonder I'm struggling so much. I actually disagree with you here. I actually mm-hmm. think it's been a good idea on the basis of the fact that Premier League hockey has essentially had 4 clubs that have been very successful and 4 clubs that have been very unsuccessful, and giving those unsuccessful clubs a bit more of an opportunity and something to strive for at the end of the season, not unreasonable. I don't know that you'd want to do it forever, but I can understand why they're doing it now. Well done, Soph. Love, fair or farce. Let's wrap up the show with some power rankings. How about that?
Let's go, Hookie.